Hello, and welcome to Reflections, a podcast miniseries featuring conversations with each of the artists in the exhibition Reflecting on Ruth Asawa in the Garden of Remembrance, on view at the San Francisco State University Fine Arts Gallery from February 24th to April 6th, 2024. My name is Weston Teruya. I'm an artist and writer, and I'll be your host over the next few weeks as we highlight the work of each of the exhibiting artists, Mark Bao Sasaki, Tina Kashibagi, Paul Kitagaki Jr., Lisa Solomon, and Titi Takemoto. Each episode will feature a short conversation with one of the exhibiting artists, giving us a peek into the creative process and research behind their projects in their own words. This episode, we're talking with Lisa Solomon. Let's jump in to hear Lisa's reflections on her work.
Hi, I'm Lisa Solomon. I am a mixed media artist. I tend to work on projects on a research basis. So I get an idea in my head and then I work through that. Sometimes it's like a short thing. Sometimes it's years of the same thing over and over. I work both on smaller scale drawings and watercolor paintings and then really large installations.
Can you tell us about the project that you're exhibiting in the gallery?
So this is a Ruth Asawa tribute show. Ruth is an artist who I have held near and dear to my heart for many, many, many years. She's an amazing creator. And in thinking about her work and her Japanese roots and my Japanese roots and trying to make work that speaks to her genre of making but also reflects my own, I decided to do some research into Japanese netting. Her sculptures are woven together in a way that remind me of nets. They have a little more structure, but there's just a similarity to that pattern. And the pattern in Japanese is called amime, and it's a really common pattern. In fact, most people have seen it at some point in their lives, probably. It's on bowls and dishes and chopsticks, and it was used a lot in clothing, on kimonos. The net symbolizes like good luck, like this idea that you're a fisherman and you have this net and hopefully you come home with a big harvest. So I kind of liked all the ideas behind the net. And I always use my work as a way to research things about my own cultural history that I don't necessarily have immediate access to. So thinking about what amime means and visually how it looks, it seemed perfect. So I have created kind of two versions of a net. One is actually really mimicking a fisherman's net, which I've made out of half-inch cotton rope, which I dyed ombre in indigo. So it's really dark on the top portion, and then it gets lighter and lighter and lighter. And then I left the bottom part of it, the natural color of the rope. And that's going to sweep from the ceiling of the gallery all the way to the floor. And then another piece, I've been working with rope to create giant French knots in a nod to something called a sennin body, which was a belt that women made for men going off to war in World War II. It was like a protectionary symbol. They wore it usually around their hara, which is your gut, which is where Japanese people think your soul resides. And so I made a net pattern version of these giant French knots, kind of hearkening back to two things, so the net and the sennin body. And those knots are also dyed indigo and ombre from dark to light. And so these pieces will be living side by side and hopefully having an interesting conversation with one another.
You mentioned that both of these pieces have this protective intention behind them that comes from the spiritual and cultural practice. Can you talk about the role that plays in your work, perhaps even more broadly, and how that impacts the way that you work with the materials?
So the sennin body were supposed to be, like, in the ideal way, 1,000 women would make a knot in the belt. So it would be 1,000 knots made by 1,000 different women. So women would stand outside of train stations and hand these belts around, and people getting off the train would each make a knot. It didn't always work that way. Sometimes there was a singular person making them. But the idea of collective luck generation is something that really interests me. It really harkens to a sense of community, which is something that I have grown to find really important in my work and in my life, just kind of figuring out how to create a community, how to work within a community. Sometimes I work on projects that are more social practice-based, so I ask the community for help, or I've worked on projects where I've asked the community to make pieces of the work that ends up being displayed. So I really like that idea of literally tying and threading people together, which is what I am doing in the work as well. Making the knots is kind of fascinating. It turns out I'm the only person who's been able to make knots. I've tried to teach other people and it doesn't quite work. But other people have helped me. Like my parents always help me glue in hardware for the knots, and other people help me cut the rope. So it is kind of like this idea of how many people does it take to make something happen. And that's something that profoundly interests me in life too, not just in artwork, but just kind of how we all work together.
You mentioned earlier that this thread of research runs through your work. Can you talk a little bit about how you engaged with the history of these traditions and the variety of sources you were pulling from to build these ideas?
It's hard to say exactly where it all started. I mean, as a half Japanese person, as I mentioned before, I often use my work as an excuse to be able to research things that are of interest to me. And maybe, you know, we had a doll or a mask or something in our home growing up, and I never quite understood what it was about or why I was drawn to it. So then I use my work to kind of deep dive into, like, what is this? And why am I visually interested in this? And why do I like things stacked? And there's so much stacking in Japanese culture. Or why do I like this use of negative space? And, you know, oh, all these other Japanese artists that I didn't really know, but now I'm looking at, oh, we all use clouds the same way, or we space things the same way. So is there sort of this like cellular memory aspect of things that happen? So the research, it's kind of like one thing leads to another, leads to another. The Sennin Buddy piece happened because I had been profoundly interested in planes in World War II and tanks. And I had been trying to make war machines and dangerous things funny or softer. So I did like a series of felt tanks. Or I researched lead planes in World War II and they had polka dots on them. And so I really liked this idea of like, wow, we're taking this like heavy, dangerous death machine, but we're putting polka dots on it. And so there was this whole kind of like slight feminization of these really masculine tools. And that really fed into some feminist theory that I had studied when I was in college. So it kind of becomes like this meandering path. And as I researched World War II bomb machines and tanks, I ended up learning about fugu, which is the balloon bombs that the Japanese sent over to America. And none of them actually went off, but they could have. And parts of them were found like all the way in Michigan and Texas. And the U.S. government put a lid on the information. And had they known that they were making it over, they might have continued to make them and send them, but they stopped. That research then led to the Sennin Buddy research. So it was just kind of this like, oh, once I dip my toe in the water, the pool is very vast. And then I just am like going and just finding things that interest me. And the Amime net pattern I actually fell in love with when I went on a trip to Japan. And if you have ever been to Japan, you know that everything gets wrapped. When you leave a store, you cannot leave a store without it somehow being wrapped and put in a bag and perfectly presented to you with the handles like held towards your person. And I bought some gift somewhere and it was wrapped in anime patterned paper. And I was like, this is beautiful. What is this pattern? What is this about? And it took me a couple years, but then I was finally like, okay, what is this pattern? Oh, it's a net pattern. Where did it come from? Oh, wait, it's on everything. It's on dishes. It's on, you know, hand towels. And so again, it was just like one thing led to another. And then, you know, in my mind, anything fiber you can like pull together. So like a French knot and then a netted net are not really that different, right? Especially if I'm utilizing rope to make giant French knots. So I just decided, okay, let's keep using rope and like let's make a giant net too. It's a very roundabout answer to your question.
I really appreciate the way that it reveals the flow of your thinking and the ways you're threading these histories together. Across your work, both in these installations and your past work, you have this very distinct sense of color. Can you talk a little bit about the role this bold use of color plays in your approach?
I think I have always been drawn to colors and have always felt strong emotional connection to colors. I mean, it's why I never took color theory, which is kind of why I ended up writing a book on color theory after researching a whole bunch of color theories and realizing that it was kind of stiff and really male-oriented and dominated in terms of the scientific approach to color. And so I wanted to do something more conversational. And I think that just the way that color influences me and makes me feel, like there's nothing like engaging with like a Terrell piece, right? Where the color literally changes your breathing. And it's just fascinating to me that we are so attuned to this thing that is kind of intangible or hard to talk about or hard to describe. And so I always really like to think about how colors shift, how we get from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum. Like, why is the circle in the Japanese flag red? What is it with that sort of Chinese red lacquer color that is so prominent in Japanese culture? And then indigo, you know, I've done a lot of research into pigments too, and indigo is one of the oldest, and it's also one of the most traditional in so many aspects of Japanese culture. Like, so again, like, where does indigo come from, and why are those roots so deep? And so I try to think about what colors have extra meanings so that I can slyly insert those extra meanings into the pieces. Because, you know, when you make work, one of the things is its first impact. Like, what does it look like? How do you respond to how it looks like? And then there's the second impact of, like, well, what did the artist intend? And then I think there's many more multiple impacts of, like, oh, wait, so what would happen if this was green instead of blue? Or, you know, is it blue because it's relating to water, or is it blue because of a different emotional quality? And, you know, all of those responses are valid, and I like to leave those doors open for people. So if they want different impacts, the layers are there for them to get to it.
Along those lines, do you have any particular hopes for how you'd like people to engage with the work in the exhibition?
That's a hard thing because, I mean, a lot of times, like, I talk about this with my students, right? Sometimes you can argue that an artwork isn't complete until a viewer has seen it. So it's like one thing when it's just yours and it hasn't been out in the world. And then it's another thing when the viewer steps in, and then you can't control people's reactions. And I don't want to control people's reactions. Obviously, like, I have never wanted anybody to tell me, this is what you should feel when you're standing in front of an Eva Hesse piece. Like, you just have to have your reaction. I think the greatest gift is when somebody has a reaction, positive or negative. I think a lot of times people ask me how long it takes me to make something. And that is always a curious question because it's not necessarily about the time spent. Again, one of the things I talk about with my students is you can make a great piece of work in 5 seconds and you can make a terrible piece of work in 5 years. So it's not necessarily the time spent. And then also it's really hard to quantify because I was actually just painting with my child and they were like, you paint so fast. That took me, you know, 2 hours and it's only taking you 30 minutes. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, that's because I've been painting for 30 years, 40 years, you know? So it's like your entire life is necessary in order for you to get to the point of where you currently are and currently making. And that's always shifting. And I feel like it's the same with the viewer. Like, your entire life is what took you to have whatever response it is that you're having in front of a work. And then your life can change and your response can be different. So, I mean, it's a complicated relationship. I think it's one that we seek out. It's why we read. It's why we listen to music. It's why we go see movies. There's something about a nonverbal communication response that is just incredibly powerful. So, I mean, if anyone has any kind of response, I see it as a gift.
Thank you for joining us this week. Please tune in each episode as we feature each of the exhibiting artists in reflecting on Butasawa and the Garden of Remembrance. Please visit the Fine Arts Gallery to see Lisa's installation and the work of all of the artists. The exhibition will be up from February 24th to April 6th. Gallery hours are Tuesday through Friday, 12 noon to 4 p.m., with special hours on Saturdays during public programs. Thank you to Matthew Love for composing and performing the music you're hearing, especially for this series. Special thanks to Sharon Bliss and Kevin Chen, co-curators of the exhibition. The exhibition is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts, the Henry and Tomoe Takahashi Charitable Foundation, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, and San Francisco State University's Instructionally Related Student Activities Fund.